McGill Daily of the Daily.
I'm McGill Daily.
Hi, I'm calling from the McGill Daily. Can I ask you some questions?
This is a little bit diplomatic.
News. Can you design?
Could I see you for a second?
We're going to cap this.
News, can you dummy?
Did that story come in yet?
Editorial's in 5 minutes.
McGill Daily.
Unfit to print.
You're listening to Unfit to Print, a McGill Daily and CKUT collaboration. I'm Alice DeTrue. Unfit to Print is a bi-weekly segment produced by student contributors. On today's program, we give you extended interviews and coverage of stories from the Daily's latest print issue. You'll hear an interview with the director of the new temporary house, La Maison Kangourou, about the new temporary house, as well as the Quebec foster system as a whole. But first, the Student Society of McGill, or SMU, is holding a general assembly tomorrow evening. One of the motions that will be voted on is for SMU to support a campus free from harmful military technology development. The Daily's Molly Korab sat down with SMU Arts Senator Karim Ibrahim yesterday.
I'm here with Karim Ibrahim, an Arts Senator at SMU, aka the Student Society of McGill University. He was involved with the organization of last week's forum regarding the development of military technology in McGill laboratories. This week, we'll also see the debate of a General Assembly motion mandating SMU to support campaigns opposing harmful military research at McGill. So, Karim, if you could start by giving us some context for the forum and the controversy surrounding military technology at McGill.
Yeah, totally. So I was kind of grateful, to be honest, because the forum itself was organized by the VP University Affairs of SMU, Claire Stewart-Kanigan. And she's been someone who I've looked to gain a little bit more insight on this issue. And the forum was a great venue for people of different opinions to like voice their concerns and to be able to speak to how they felt about it. And myself coming into it, I definitely have my own views on how I see, you know, our future students kind of acting on this issue. But we got to hear a lot of different perspectives, and it was nice to hear why people thought that this is something that could be beneficial to the university, could affect students if we were to speak against it, and different ideas were proposed, and I got a little bit more background on what McGill's been doing on this front, the different ways they've been navigating the student advocacy that's been happening in that regard, in terms of like Demilitarize McGill and like what SMU's been doing to kind of be a part of that, and all those different things.
Can you tell us a little bit about the research itself and the work that Demilitarize has been doing?
Yeah, I'm fairly new to it, in all honesty, but essentially, Demilitarize has been around for many years now, and they've been like lobbying McGill to make the research that they've been doing public and have access to that information, which is goes like in line with their regulations on the conduct of research and what is and isn't allowed to be kept in secret. And the fact of the matter is that no research that's done at the university is allowed to be kept secret. And regardless of like the different like efforts that have been made by Demilitarize McGill and more recently SMU, the university hasn't really been very active in allowing us that information. So what Demilitarize McGill has been doing, they had their general assembly, I believe it was 2 weeks ago, and they've just been getting students mobilized to act more prominently like on this issue, essentially. And basically at the forum, we had some differing views on the matter, which was really nice to hear, but it also gave us some input as to how much students are privy to the different research happening, even if they are involved. For example, one of the participants noted that they had a friend in graduate studies who whose project essentially was surrounding like military research, and the research of this person wasn't actually all he was basically allowed access to was what he was doing. So even people who are closer to the issue like aren't really in the realm of awareness in terms of like what's going on. And another student also pointed out that this kind of research is often kept secret for a reason, given the nature of like world affairs and alerting different bodies of like what's happening in terms of like weapons developments, and in general it's a more secret activity. But
Can you specifically speak to the role of SMU in holding this forum, when many people would sort of say that military research is a university or an administrative matter?
Yeah, essentially what SMU wants to do is not necessarily take a position on it itself, but more like poll students, see how students feel about it, and then after that represent their views to the university, given that we are fortunate to have different avenues through which we can pursue different like advocacy in that front. So as you mentioned, like at the General Assembly, which is this Wednesday, October 22nd at 4:30 in the SMU cafeteria, there's a motion being put forward that is going to take a very strong stance against weapons development at McGill. And this was, I believe, put forward by petition through different members of like Demilitarized McGill, their student mobilization, and evidently members of SMU who do support the efforts. And essentially, we just want to like take action because the university does have like policies that state that like research in secret isn't really in line with their values. And regardless of how we feel about our university contributing to this like global kind of like war effort, which in and of itself like has a lot of different, you know, opinions in the matter coming from different spectrums of that. But yeah, we just want to have students' voices heard, kind of thing.
Can you speak a little bit to the importance of students here at McGill standing in solidarity with those who are affected by militarized violence?
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually, because it was mentioned at the forum, and I think it definitely is really important to recognize that although at times like some ideas that are tossed around are that these different like external initiatives like don't really concern students. That's like an idea that people play around with a lot, and that like the university is an academic institution in which we should really just focus on academic matters. But what you said really like hit and nailed it on the top, in that the students like represented at the university come from like a very, very diverse range of backgrounds, and a lot of those backgrounds are directly affected by the different kinds of, you know, initiatives that are promoted through weapons development, and it's definitely not something that students feel comfortable with through what I've experienced in terms of talking with constituents and whatnot. So it definitely doesn't really represent like students' true like interests, and especially those of like who they're connected with on a global scale when we're funding this kind of research.
But some would argue that it's important to stay neutral in these sorts of situations. How would you respond to that?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And when I speak to this issue, I'm more representing the views that I've been imparted on through my constituents. Like as a representative, it's not my job to, you know, impose my own views, although I'm going to be very honest, it's very tempting a lot of the time. I mean, everyone has opinions, but just in consulting with students, they're not really comfortable with it in themselves. Although, in all fairness, there are students that are. I'm an arts senator, so when I'm sitting on SMU, I represent all students like, from like the senator perspective. But in my like arts senator capacity, I do represent arts students, and in talking with them, students do feel like it is something that is like of a detrimental impact to like our community here at McGill in terms of our values and the global community as a whole. The students in engineering, for example, I know like those who were represented at the forum spoke highly in favor of weapons development, given that like these are jobs that a lot of them will be pursuing, and that's very fair. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how that motion plays out, and just bringing to light the different opinions that I've been hearing when talking to those I represent.
Have you heard specifically from students about the review process?
Yeah, so you're referring probably to the review process of the what's happening with the regulations on research. Yeah,
actually, if you could quickly explain that too.
Yeah, totally. So the regulations on research conduct this year is undergoing its like triennial review, and the organizer of the forum, that's VP University Affairs Claire Stewart Canigan, sits on this committee at Senate, which is awesome. So essentially they're going to be going through the different regulations where it dictates, you know, what is considered, you know, appropriate conduct in terms of research. Are we allowed to do it in secret or not? What happens with you know, copyright issues, like when someone's research involves two people and if someone else is taking credit? There's a quite extensive list. And yeah, when we discuss the motion this Wednesday, there'll be links to those different documents, and you can definitely check them out there. But essentially, this review is going to be happening over the course of this year. And the committee has met once so far, I believe, but I don't believe that any like significant action has been taken. There's just some different discussions surrounding what is and isn't appropriate. And I'm excited to look to our VP University Affairs to update us on that process, because it's something that she feels passionately about. Yeah.
Maybe if you could speak a little bit more to the issue of academic freedom and harmful research.
Yeah, yeah, that's a really good point to make, and it's something we discussed extensively last Wednesday. In terms of academic freedom, I guess the notion is that anyone should have the freedom to discuss, or sorry, to pursue research in whatever kind of different department interests them, and then that general concept is, you know, like productive to like institutions that have like exceptional, you know, students and exceptional research and ideas, and I definitely do believe that is a valid point. Nonetheless, the latter half of what you're mentioning in terms of harmful research is definitely where these two ideas like intersect, and that's where like action needs to be had, I guess. And that like research that is deemed by like our collective like student membership to be like harmful to our global community, harmful to like the views of our students who feel like continuing these efforts could be detrimental to like their well-being, whether it be indirectly through like people they represent or directly through how they feel morally about the issue. Those definitely do come in conflict, and it is understandable that academic freedom is something that people want to uphold, but there's definitely a line to be drawn. I don't think it's black and white. One can't really just say academic freedom means that we can study anything, and I think there are certain limitations to that, and it's just navigating that different balance.
What about the people who speak to drone research at McGill, speaking specifically about drone research, and for non-harmful drone research? How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily something that I've consulted my constituents in specifically. So when I speak to this, I do speak on my own personal views. But in terms of non-harmful drone research, to me that almost seems like an oxymoron. And then upon further thought, I realized that I guess for defense purposes, like that could be of use to like military groups that have like, you know, a peaceful intention. But my general opinion is just that any sort of research that is like regarding weapons development is really kind of a negative impact to this whole endeavor of what we're doing at this academic institution. We have values that uphold like equity and uphold like peaceful protests and all these different things. And I definitely do think it's valid when different people speak to how like weapons development is one thing, but like military research in general can be productive in terms of like what one person mentioned at the forum was that like researching, for example, like the flow that goes over the wing of an airplane, you know, like a let's say it's like a fighter jet, you know, like that is a military thing, but like that research itself could be extrapolated to different areas of research, like whether it be, yeah, like transport or anything, which could be beneficial in other realms. And I guess the matter is just to draw that line and say, well, when does it become military research and when can we divide it? Do we need to divide it? Like, is it okay to deem this like a harmful endeavor or not? Those are like questions that it's important to ask, I guess.
So what kind of responsibility do you think the university has in regards to harmful or military research conducted on campus?
Yeah, based on what I've received in terms of when I've asked different students on campus how they feel about the matter, the university is definitely not a place for this to happen, and it kind of goes along the lines of like ethical investments in terms of both time and money. And when we're contributing to something that isn't necessarily beneficial to our like global community as a whole, it definitely isn't something that I personally believe, and many of my constituents as well, believe should be happening on our campus. There definitely can be good things that come of it, but I think the first step in the process is to ensure like full transparency and accountability on the part of the university and in these endeavors, and making sure that students are aware of what's happening. And at that point, then once that happens, hopefully we can make distinctions between what is and isn't harmful. And aside from personal views, as long as the student population, including staff as well, of course, are content with the decisions being made, I guess that's how we should move forward.
And for the motion this Wednesday, if it passes, do you think that McGill will pay attention to it?
McGill actually, or SMU more like, along with the Demilitarized McGill and the different like advocacy efforts that have been happening on this front for the past little while, they have been lobbying McGill for quite some time. I was looking through some of the documents of Demilitarized McGill the other day, and they were saying how this has been happening for decades now, like since the 1980s, and McGill is quite firm in their stance on like not sharing this document, not allowing students like access to what's happening and keeping this in secret. So it's not really much of a secret to those who are really like close and like in heart to what's happening in terms of advocacy, that this is something that the university is holding back. Like it's very, very blunt, essentially. The only thing that needs to happen now, essentially, is just bringing that into like the broader like public sphere and making sure students are aware of that. But yeah, I think that the main issue now is just ensuring transparency, because like the McGill is aware that the students are uncomfortable with this. I'm not sure if they're aware that it's like a majority of students. I'm not sure if it's a majority of students, which is why I'm quite excited for this Wednesday to see how the student populace is feeling. But they definitely are quite firm in their position on not sharing that information. So hopefully we can reach a consensus and continue to like act.
And last question, what do you think happens if the motion doesn't pass?
That's an interesting question. And I think if the motion doesn't pass, we have to do what we are elected to do in terms of representing our constituents. And we'll have to leave it to, you know, groups like Demilitarize McGill to continue that advocacy effort if that's something we feel passionate about, and pursue it perhaps in our personal lives, like a separate from our positions as representatives. Because, and like the growing kind of understanding, and something that I think a lot of us who are involved in governance are learning, is that like we are not elected to like represent our own opinions and to pursue, you know, different avenues with the university where we truly feel ourselves is efficient and like beneficial to our overall wellness, like as an institution. But if that's how everyone feels, then there's not much we can do to further that effort.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Kareem.
Thank you.
That was Arts Senator Kareem Ibrahim talking about weapons development research on campus. SMU's General Assembly is tomorrow at 4:30 p.m., and there will be a debate of the motion that mandates SMU to support campaigns opposing harmful military research at McGill. We turn now to foster care in Quebec. The Daily's Emma Norandunkian sat down with José Fortin, the director of the new temporary house La Maison Kangourou.
So what exactly is La Maison Kangourou?
The Kangourou House is the first house in Quebec, emergency home, that will be taking in children from 0 to 12 years old when parents are going through a difficult time or a crisis.
So why exactly did you start the Kangourou House?
Well, we started the Kangourou House because I started the house because I saw many times situations where parents, we hear a lot about parents who sometimes go to up to killing their children or hurting their children, and all kinds of other situations. It could be a fire, a health issue, all kinds of issues where parents are in a spur of a moment in an emergency situation, and they don't always have a place for their children. They don't always have family around them. And I always said to myself, how come there's not a home that is open 24 hours, 7 days a week, where parents can just go and say, look, you know, call and say, I have an emergency. Can you please take my children? Because not all children, not all parents are parents who neglect or do harm to their children, you know. So we need a home, a place open to receive these children.
Could you talk a bit about the opening of your emergency home? To my knowledge, it wasn't, I mean, the idea was there a few years ago, but
yeah, I started the project in 2011. I was doing my doctorate degree, and I said, you know, I'm going to open the first emergency home for kids 24 hours, 7 days a week. And for the first year, I was working, doing all the paperwork, because opening a house for kids requires a lot of administrative work. So I had to go through all the process the first year. And then we started to have Opération Enfant Soleil, who joined with us. At the very beginning, they gave us money for a future home, and then it went on. And then the newspaper got, you know, the media helped us also a lot. They talked about the project, and it was only at the first stage of the project, but they were you know, interested in it. So the first year was that. The second year, I started to receive children. I rented a place in Le Plateau downtown. And we started receiving children as a pilot project, and I received over maybe 75 to 100 children. And then that's where we saw the necessities and all the problematic surrounding families and the emergencies that were, you know, occurring. And that's what we did the second year. And the third year, we started to look for a real home, and that's what we did. We found a house and it was provided by a community, religious community, who helped us, because buying a house was out of budget for so many children. So they helped us the first year. We renovated the whole house. It took a year. There were over 125 volunteers from all horizons. It came from, you know, local people, immigrants. Everybody gave in, chipped in for this community project. And we opened officially for the media. We opened the 23rd of September. We made the people visit the home and everything. It's on three floors. We can have up to 15 days the kids in the home, and it's 0-12 years old.
How is your house, your emergency home, different from the way from other foster care systems in Quebec?
Well, foster care system is another thing. A foster care, when the foster care comes in, what happens is they have to have a signalement, which is, in English, a signalement. Somebody has to say that a child is in danger, his security is, or he's neglected. And if it's not the case, then they don't, you know, they don't intervene. That's why. And that's, again, it's the state that come in, the family, and you know, do the procedures. Us, the Kangaroo House, it's the parents who decide by themselves that they bring the children here when they need help. We have parents from the government who are in the system of the protection de la jeunesse, who themselves call in, you know, and say, look, I'm already in the system, and I need help. And that's amazing, because this is what we want. We want parents to be responsible and take care of their children. So we had a few of those who came here, and we can take their children in while they take a break or do, you know, get help for whatever's happening in their lives. But most of our clientele is really Mr. and Mrs. Anybody. I mean, okay. We have teachers, we have professionals, we have, you know, when you're a mother or a father, the title has nothing to do with it. You know, we have people from all professions, even people who don't work. It doesn't matter. I mean, when you're a parent, you're a parent. The title has nothing to do with it.
What exactly does the process entail for parents wishing to bring their children to your emergency home?
Well, most of the people, I mean, almost all the time people call, and that's what we want people to call first, and then we listen to what's going on, and sometimes it's a situation where it requires immediate takeover. Like we had a mom, she had three children, her husband was working out of Canada, and she was alone at that period, and her six-month-old baby, she went to the CLSC, and they said to her that the baby needs to be sent by ambulance to the hospital. So she says, I have no one else for my two other children. So that's when we come in. You know, we take the two other kids while they go. She went to the hospital. We did an agreement this year with after 2 years of negotiation with St. Justine, and now we're going to be working with them, and they're providing help with us. They're providing their support for volunteers, specialized volunteers who work with us. All kinds of volunteers, actually. It's not only people who are professionals, but we have volunteers from all horizons. But St. Justine is helping us this year with that issue. They're joining in the project.
What kind of feedback have you received since the opening of your emergency home?
It's overwhelming, I would say, because, I mean, we were, you know, when I started the home, it was never with the intent to have all that attention, but, you know, when we opened the 23rd, we had all the media here. We have people calling in from everywhere saying, oh, wow, we need an emergency home here. We need one in our city. We have the Chaire de Recherche, you know, research centers in universities are interested in the project. I mean, it's amazing, you know, all the feedback we get from all families. We get tons of emails saying, wow, this is amazing, you know. It's really good, because sometimes there is a situation where the family crisis can be very important, you know, and sometimes it could be a light issue also. It all depends. Some moms need to go to the hospital, and they don't know when they're going to get out of the hospital. So we have immigrants, a lot of immigrants here in Quebec. They don't always have their family. We had immigrants who needed to go give birth, and they had other children. So we can, you know, come in and take the kids and not go to their house. They bring it here, but all I'm saying is, we do intervene in all kinds of situations.
Where can people go if they wish to find more information on that?
www.lamaisonkangourou.org in French and www.thekangaroohouse.org in English.
Great. Thank you so much, Ms. Fortin, for the opportunity to interview you today.
Thank you. You're more than welcome. Thanks to you.
Well, that does it for this episode of Unfit to Print. Special thanks to Molly and Emma for their pieces this week. And once again, the multimedia section of the Daily is looking for contributors. If you want to help put this show together, or if you're interested in radio and video journalism, email multimedia@mcgilldaily.com.
Unfit to Print.